The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
When you're an under-the-radar player and you're working your way up the ladder, you got to make some sacrifices. And that's if you really want to play at the pro level. For me, I knew I was an under-the-radar player. I needed to get film. I needed to get some type of overseas exposure. So I took the offer, even though they weren't paying me. I had housing covered and food, but I didn't get paid, which is definitely not any lucrative career for a pro basketball player.
Darrell Nelson was born and raised in inner city Rochester, New York. Darrell's book, Tour to Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball, tells of his experiences playing basketball overseas. Darrell had an up and down career in high school and he was cut from the team as a senior. He graduated from Lemoyne College with a bachelor's degree in business management and finance. He began graduate school in 2015 at Cardiff University in the United Kingdom, where he played for the men's basketball team, accomplishing a lifelong dream. In 2016, Darrell won the MVP award for his college basketball team in the UK. After playing only 1 year of college basketball, he decided to turn pro overseas. He has experienced some of the best and worst things that come with playing professional basketball and learned some life lessons along the way that he shares in his new book, Tour to Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball. You want to have a notebook by your side as you listen to this episode with Darrell Nelson, author of the book, Tour to Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball. Hey, Hoophead, start the season off strong this October with scary good deals of up to $4,000 off the top training solutions from our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Prepare your team for success this preseason with spooky savings of up to $4,000 off Dr. Dish Basketball's shooting machines designed for schools and programs. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Munch Williams from Pro Scholar Athletics and the author of Our PSA. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, coaches, check out our newest sponsor, SportsLab 360. An online platform made up of interactive modules that focus on different tactical concepts, from the basics of reading a screen to specific offenses such as the dribble drive. Especially for our high school coaches out there with such limited practice time with your players, assigning the SportsLab 360 modules to them before practice can save you tons of time from having to stand there and explain these concepts. And you can move more quickly on to the next layer while your competition is still stuck on the fundamentals. As a coach, you can also put customized notes into the player's interactive modules, and you can track how they're scoring on the modules, making it a valuable tool to help identify areas that need development. These guys have had major success in soccer and just recently launched in basketball, and I'd urge all of our listeners to go check them out. Through October and November, you can use the code all lowercase, HOOPHEADS, to save 15% off any SportsLab 360 plan. Head over to www.sportslab360basketball.com to check them out. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. You want to have a notebook by your side as you listen to this episode with Darrell Nelson, author of the book, Tour to Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by Darrell Nelson, author of Tour to Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball, and overseas professional player. Darrell, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into the book, hearing a lot of the stories that you have to tell. It's one of our favorite parts of the podcast when we talk to people who have played in various places around the world. You're going to share some of their favorite stories. I know you got a bunch of them that you're ready to share with us, but let's start off the top here by giving me a chance to tell people a little bit about the book, where it came from. Give us a quick summary where people can find the book, and then we'll dive into your story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate it. So yeah, the book is called Tour de Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball. It was just released this past March of this year. So it's been out for about, I want to say, 5 to 6 months now. And you can purchase the book on Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle, paperback, and hardcover. So those are the three formats you can purchase the book. And just a little quick summary. It's about my basketball journey, pretty much starting as a kid, all the way through high school, different things I experienced, the challenges, the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, different players that I was able to play with, compete against. Some are in the NBA, some are, you know, played overseas, and pretty much, yes, it talks about my basketball journey.
Where'd the inspiration come from? When did you know you wanted to write a book?
Okay, that's a good question. So I would have to say I initially got the idea of writing a book and telling my story when I was playing in the ABA in Louisiana.
Was there one moment where it just hit you and, like, boom, that light bulb went off? You're like, hey, man, I think this life story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to say there was a time when I was at practice in Louisiana and we were competing. I was competing against the starting shooting guard at the time. And we were playing one-on-one, and pretty much I destroyed him. It was a one-on-one game, but I destroyed him in front of the head coach. And that specific season, I wasn't getting as much minutes, and there was a lot of politics going on. So after that happened, I started to think, like, you know, I really want to share this story. I feel like this will really, you know, inspire, you know, some players who may have similar challenges, you know, playing at the pro level or, you know, whatever level. And I want to also say during 2020, when I was overseas in the UK, playing during the pandemic, that also inspired me to, you know, write the book and, you know, tell my side of the story, because that was obviously a different time in our history. So I wanted to share the story and let people know what it was like, you know, pursuing the overseas basketball career during that time period.
Where'd you get the title?
Tour de Hoops. Really, it came from the bicycle race in France. I don't know if people are familiar with it, Tour de France. And what Tour de France is, it's like I believe it's the world's biggest cycling race. And it's very challenging. And I sort of compared that to my basketball journey as a kid all the way up into the pros. It was very challenging. So instead of Tour de France, I changed it into Tour de Hoops. And if you read the book, there's a lot of different stories in there, different things that I experienced, why I feel that my journey is, you know, bigger than basketball.
All right, let's dive into the journey. Let's go back in time to when you were a kid, born in Rochester, New York. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences in basketball.
For sure. So I want to say in chapter one, I talk about when I first really, you know, fell in love with the game. My older brother, I was going to see him play in one of his high school games. He went to a private Jesuit school in Rochester called McQuaid Jesuit School. Are you familiar with that one?
I am, because just that Jack Neuser on the podcast, he was the head coach there.
No way. Jack Leisure. Yeah, so that's so ironic. Jack Leisure was actually on my brother's team.
Well, so see, all these little tentacles intersect. It's kind of amazing. As you well know, the basketball world is incredibly small and interconnected. And so, yeah, in fact, Jack's episode, let's see, it went up. It's today. Today was recorded on Thursday. So Jack's episode, I believe, went up on Sunday night. So, yeah, just within the last 5 days, he put the episode out. We talked to Jack like about 2.5 weeks ago. So, crazy.
Wow, that's so crazy. That's so ironic right there. So at the time, I don't know if Jack might have mentioned it, but when he was playing for McQuaid, they were pretty good.
We talked about all the guys that we had on his team.
Oh yeah, a lot of D1 prospects, a lot of D1 players there, and pretty much when my brother was playing on that team, they were ranked like nationwide, like nationally, and there was a time where my brother had a tournament in New Jersey, and we had to take a road trip out there to see him play. So long story short, they have the game out in New Jersey. Unfortunately, they lost the game. But after the game, like I noticed, like the stands started getting crowded, like the bleacher, not the bleachers, but the arena just started getting crowded, you know, with fans, with reporters. And I'm only around 9 years old at the time. So I'm looking around like, you know, what's going on? And, little did I know, LeBron James shows up with the St. Vincent, St. Mary's Irish team, you know. I didn't know who LeBron was at the time. So he plays the game. He drops 50 points, and he's dunking on people. They're trying to double team him. They cannot stop him. And I was really amazed after that time. And that's really when I first really, I would say, fell in love with the game of basketball.
What was the biggest thing? I'm just curious, because I saw LeBron for the first time. I had heard of him before, and he's from obviously the Raptors, and I've played myself. I had heard of him before his junior season, but I saw him play at Cleveland State University in his junior year, and I'll give you my impressions of what stood out for me. But when you think back, and obviously you were a little bit younger when you saw him than I was, but what do you remember specifically about LeBron? Obviously, he scored 50 points and nobody can stop him, but was there any specific thing that stood out? You're like, man, this guy just has whatever it is, and then I'll share what I thought my things were when I watched it.
For sure. From what I can remember, he was just so dominant. Like, at his size, you know, he was able to handle the ball very good as a guard does. But just in terms of his all-around game, he was so dominant. And I remember this because I'm pretty sure they were trying to double-team him for majority of the game. And for him to still put up 50 points and, you know, just do those amazing things, that's what really stuck out for me. How about you, though? What'd you notice?
Yeah. So for me, I think the biggest thing that stood out, I mean, again, I could probably name 50 things, but the one thing that stood out to me more than anything was just how much ground he covered and how fast. Like, he would be running. And again, you're talking about, he's playing against really good high school players, but still mostly normal high school players. And he would go from half court to the basket in like 4 steps, whether he was filling the lane on a break, whether he had the ball in his hands. Wow. And just his sheer speed up and down the floor, and not even speed like where you think of a guy who's completely exerting themselves and his arms are flailing all over the place and this guy's running as hard as he can. I mean, LeBron, just from that age when he was probably 16, maybe when I saw him, maybe 17, just floated down the court, and the strides were just so long. And I remember being like, this guy just does not look like anybody else I've ever seen. The other guy that I saw in high school, I don't know if you remember Jimmy Jackson, who played at Ohio State. He went to Toledo McCumber here in the state of Ohio. But my dad and I, I'm going back a long time, because I think I was probably in, man, I'm trying to think. I was probably in maybe 10th grade, And we had just heard about this kid, Jimmy Jackson. This is obviously pre-internet and everything else. And so he was playing at a local high school here in our area, Elyria High School. And my dad and I just decided, hey, we're going to go watch this game. We had never seen the guy. So obviously today, if you went and saw somebody, you'd watch their highlights or you'd know exactly who they are, what they look like. And we had no idea. We just knew this name. So we show up at the school and you're kind of sitting there. JV game goes on, JV game ends, and you know, you're waiting for the team to come out, the band's playing. And I just remember when Jimmy Jackson came out, he was in 10th grade at the time. And he came out and he looked probably the same way he did when he was at Ohio State, even when he was early in his career with the Mavericks and the NBA. I mean, he was just he was just huge, built completely differently, looked like a man in 10th grade. And then
he had an NBA body already.
Yeah, NBA body in 10th grade. I mean, just incredible. And then obviously tremendously skilled player and just looked like a guy who was 7-8 years older than all the guys he was playing against. And yet he was only a 10th grader at the time. So those are the two guys. When I think about high school players who were just completely otherworldly in terms of what their body looked like and their feel for the game, LeBron and Jimmy Jackson for me are the two that stand out. So it's cool that you got to see him early before he became super well-known. When you're talking about him in high school, I know that it was funny because here in Cleveland, when he was, I want to say maybe even by the time he was a junior, he was already going and scrimmaging with Cavs players.
And are you serious?
And there was talk like in town that like, if this dude was coming out in the draft, like between his sophomore and junior year, or after his junior year, like he would, you know, that this guy's surefire number one pick. And you just remember reading these stories and being like, come on, man, this kid's 16 years old or 17 years old. There's no way he can be the number one pick. And I would say that what LeBron accomplished, regardless of whether you think him or Jordan is the greatest of all time, he's undisputably one of the top two players in the history of the league.
No doubt about that.
The hype that guy had, can you imagine like having that kind of scrutiny on you from the time you were 15 years old and then trying to live up to it and then actually living up to it? I mean, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, he literally, you know, exceeded the expectations, and his expectations were already so high, which is crazy. You know, like for him to have four championships and, you know, go back to Cleveland and, you know, him just passing Kareem for that all-time scoring champ record. He's one of one, you know, and it's debatable him or Jordan, but you know what he's accomplished in his career and is still going, it's just amazing.
Yeah, you cannot argue with the success he's had. All right, so that kind of got you started, got you hooked on the game. Obviously you had been watching your brother who had some success and got you watching the game, and now as you start to get a little bit more serious about it, what do you remember about working to try to get better from the time, let's say you're middle school, high school? What are you doing on your own to get better? How are you improving your game? Are you playing pickup? Are you in the gym by yourself? What's the process for getting better?
Yeah. So a lot of times I would go to the local rec center. That's where I would play pickup and, you know, get some shots up by myself. That's what I remember getting better. Unfortunately, I never got the chance to play AAU at the time. You know, it was expensive for my parents to afford, and I never really got that opportunity. And you know, looking back, I thought like, okay, you know, I need to play AAU. I need to get on that, you know, basketball circuit if I want to play at the next level. And that was always one thing I kind of feel like, you know, I wish I had the opportunity to do, you know. But other than that, you know, playing in youth leagues, playing at the rec center, and you know, working out with different players in the community. I was in a program called MBS, stands for Mind, Body, and Soul. And this specific program, they train athletes in basketball, football, baseball, and I was working out with a personal trainer in that program. Starting in high school, I want to say, starting from 10th grade all the way up through 12th grade.
All right. Can I ask you a question about AAU in general? I'm curious, and it kind of relates to your story. And I think it's an issue that sometimes gets talked about, but not all the time. And that's you talked a little bit about it. You would have liked to have played AAU basketball, but maybe your parents couldn't afford it. And you look at the way that basketball has changed over the last 50 years, and you think about how in the early days of basketball, you know, you always hear it was a city game. And you had lots of guys that made it to the league that came out of New York City, that came out of the big cities from across the country. And now, in so many ways, like, we've priced kids from the inner city out of the process because maybe their parents can't afford it. Maybe they can't leave their job to drive to these tournaments. And in so many ways, I think that the game has been suburbanized, or just maybe it's become too expensive. And I just was curious if you've thought about that at all and kind of how you think about it.
Yeah, no, that's a real good question. Now, I do feel like, you know, the AAU platform gives you a better opportunity at getting looked at by, you know, college coaches. And obviously, if you can't afford to play in it or whatever is stopping you from playing in AAU, if you're not able to play, that obviously limits your, you know, ability to get seen. However, you know, I think that now there's a little bit more exposure, you know. If you don't play, you know, with social media out there and different outlets and platforms, you know, going to camps and different things like that, where you can still get some good exposure if you're a young player and you don't have the opportunity to play AAU. But I feel like when I was growing up, it was really, you know, AAU or you had to be some phenom, you know, averaging 30 or 40 in high school and, you know, getting, you know, letters from NCAA recruits and stuff like that. I feel like those are really the only two ways to know, to get that exposure you're looking for.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, the AAU side of it, I think, is really important. My son's going to be a senior this year, and I would say that all of the attention that he's gotten from college recruiting has all come through his AAU setting, not through his high school setting. And so I think it's just one of those things that in basketball, we have to make sure that we're mindful of, to make sure that we're not excluding particular groups. And I think it's a problem, not just in basketball, but I think in youth sports in general, everything has become so expensive. When we think about hiring a trainer and just all the stuff, like the travel and staying in hotels and all these things. And obviously, if a kid's good enough and they could play on a circuit team or a sponsored team or a, you know, a team that gets stuff paid for, that works out great. It's just some of those kids that are maybe a level below that. How do we make sure that we're not missing out on those? I think that's a, you know, it's just something to, for everyone out there in the basketball world to consider. I know you had a unique experience. Go ahead. If you're going to say something on that, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yeah, definitely. You're absolutely right. And also, I want to say in terms of the AAU circuit, it also gives kids an opportunity to get high level coaching. Because you look at, you know, if you just play in high school, not to say that there aren't some great high school coaches out there, but, you know, AAU, I've been around that environment. It gives you an opportunity to really work on your game and work on specifics and also play against competition that is, you know, nationally recognized. So I think that's another advantage in terms of playing AAU, along with the exposure.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, I think it's, if you get in the right program with the right coaches and you get people that care about you and your development, there's no question that it was a huge, huge positive in the game from that perspective. Tell me a little bit about your high school experience. I know it went maybe not the way that you would have imagined it or dreamed it to be, but just tell us a little bit about what your experience was like as a high school player.
Right. Absolutely. So, I started high school at Bishop Kearney High School. It's a private school in Rochester, New York. Started there. I played on the freshman team my freshman year. The season went good. I was in the starting lineup. I would say I was relatively at the same level or maybe a little bit higher than my peers as a freshman. But yeah, so I played on the freshman team my freshman year. Didn't finish that season. My grades weren't up to par with my parents' standards, and I had to unfortunately quit the team that year. I talk about it in the book. That was a challenging time for me. You know, first year in high school, I hit a game winner that season as well. So I was really on the high. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to finish that season. Going to my sophomore year, I stayed at Bishop Kearney, and I played on the JV team that year. So obviously higher level, different coach. I started at the three that year. So I started at the small forward. It was a relatively successful season. We won some games. However, I didn't finish that season either. Got into some trouble in school. And once again, my parents made me turn in my jersey. Didn't finish that season. So as you can see, I had a lot of, you know, stumbling blocks all throughout my high school career, which prevented me from, you know, even finishing the full season. So then fast forward to my junior year, I transferred out of Bishop Kearney to a public school called Wilson Magnet High School. And this was a, you know, big change for me, you know, not only on the basketball court, but even just going to school. You know, we didn't have to wear uniforms, a lot of less restrictions there. But just going to the basketball court, I made the team. I made varsity my junior year. I wasn't in the starting lineup, or I wasn't even in the substitution rotation. So this was a major change for me coming from Bishop Kearney, where I was starting my first 2 years. Obviously, you know, varsity is a higher level. And I will say that my high school team, they were ranked in the state. I think we were ranked maybe top 20 in New York State at one point. We were undefeated for majority of that season. So we had a pretty good team. However, I rarely seen the floor that year, you know, and that was when I started to, you know, second guess my ability to have doubts, you know, and I was able to finish that season. I was able to finish that complete season. We went to the playoffs, fell short, but I finished that season. And then going into my senior year, we got a new coach. The coach at Wilson resigned after 20 years coaching there, 20 plus years coaching. And this new coach, he cut me from the team my senior year. So that's how my high school career went.
When you think about the things that happened to you over the course of those 4 years, so your parents pull you off the team twice for various reasons. You don't get as much playing time as you thought you should have as a junior, and get cut as a senior. Obviously, in the moment, those are tough pills for a kid to swallow. And I'm sure in the moment, if you went back and talked to 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old Jarrell, you would have felt one way about it. When you look back on those moments now, how do you look at them differently, and how do you think that they shaped what you ended up doing with the game in the future? If you can put that into words.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Like, from what I could remember, like, I'll tell you this, that when I got cut my senior year, that was one of the saddest times I could remember. You know, one of the reasons was because I wanted to play at the college level. And obviously, as I said before, I never played AAU. So my opportunity to play college was all really depending on my senior year, because I didn't get any playing time my junior year. So I was really devastated when that happened. I didn't go to school for like 3 or 4 days. I remember my mom came in my room, because I was telling her I was sick, but really I couldn't get myself up to get out of the bed. I was that devastated. And pretty much, you know, it was a real challenging time, you know. I actually, you know, stepped away from the game after I got cut for, you know, a month or two, you know, until I could gain my confidence back, my charisma back, and my passion to play the game, you know. And I'll say that that's really when the chip, you know, got on my shoulder, you know, to motivate me to be the best player that I can be, regardless of what coach believes in me, regardless of what happened my senior year. I was, you know, that really helped get me more determined to achieve my goal of playing college basketball and even playing at a higher level.
So what's the process like for you to try to get that college opportunity? Because the two most common avenues that a player is going to have to be able to get the attention of a college coach is AAU, which obviously you didn't have the opportunity to do, and then through your high school years and being watched while you're playing there, which you didn't have quite the opportunity that you would have hoped there either. So nope. How did you go about, for lack of a better way of saying it, marketing yourself to colleges and trying to get yourself an opportunity? What did that look like?
Yeah. So like you said, it's practically almost, you know, impossible to, you know, get on the college roster, NCAA roster without playing at those two levels. So, you know, at that point, my senior year, I was offered an academic scholarship to go to Lemoyne in Syracuse. So you familiar with Lemoyne?
I am, yes.
Yes. So I got offered an academic scholarship to go there. It's only an hour and a half away from my hometown in Rochester. So I said, hey, you know, well, if I go here, they're Division II. How about I try out for the team and become a walk-on player? You know, that was my mindset at that time. Wherever I go, I want to be a walk-on player. I'm obviously not going to be a scholarship athlete. You know, I'll be a walk-on and, you know, work my way up the scale, maybe get some minutes and whatnot. So I attended Lemoyne all 4 years. I tried out for the team 3 out of the 4 years. I got cut all 3 times. The first year, I believe I was one of the better players there. The assistant coach was asking me a few questions during the tryout, but he didn't take any walk-ons my first year trying out. The other 2 years, I got cut. One of the years, he might have picked up someone who wasn't at the tryout, and the third year, he didn't pick anyone up. So I wasn't able to play NCAA basketball at all for any of those 4 years at Lemoyne.
But clearly, you made a big change academically from your freshman year in high school when your parents pulled you off the team because they didn't feel like your grades were up to par. Can you tell us a little bit about that transformation? Was that something that you made a conscious effort of, hey, I'm going to take my academics more seriously, or just what did that turnaround look like for you?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You know, after my parents took me off the team in my 2 years in high school, you know, I really decided, you know, to take academics more serious because I didn't want that to be a factor in me not playing or me not finishing the season, you know, because I still remember those feelings when I had to turn my jersey in, you know, in a plastic bag and tell the coach I'm done. Like, it's a terrible feeling, you know, especially for someone who loves the game, knows that they can contribute to the team. It's a terrible feeling. So I let that fuel me to make sure that my grades and my studies were, you know, up to par, so that wouldn't be a factor in me not playing.
What are you thinking about in terms of a future career? Are you still holding on to the basketball dream the whole time this is going on? Are you starting to look at it and say, maybe I'm not going to get to do the things that I had hoped to do in the game? I know that you got a degree in business management and finance. So were you thinking that, hey, once I graduate from Lemoyne, I'm going to be heading out to the real world? Were you still trying to figure out a way, maybe there's going to be an opportunity for me somehow, some way that I can catch on? What was the plan as you were approaching the end of those 4 years at Lemoyne?
Right. So after the third year I got cut, you know, basketball has just always been a big part of my life. And it was never a choice, or it was never, you know, doing it to be cool or for clout. It was, you know, it was a part of me. So there was a time my senior year at Lemoyne, and I'm going to one of my business classes, and you know, it's a normal lecture, but we happen to have a guest speaker this specific day, and she's an alumni at Lemoyne, and she comes in and talks to us about her business that recruits players to play a sport overseas in grad school. And, you know, the crazy thing about this story is I was thinking about, you know, skipping that class, you know, sleeping in, but I dragged myself to class that day. And, you know, it was one of the best decisions I ever made, you know, because that really opened the door for me playing the game of basketball in grad school, and definitely led to some much more opportunities. So, you know, I never gave up on playing the game, but I knew that I wasn't going to get the opportunity to play at Lemoyne. So I started to redirect my focus towards playing in grad school overseas.
What a really unique opportunity that it's kind of just so coincidental and awesome that happened to come across your path and gave you this sort of second chance at life. What was it like, first of all, going to school in another country? Had you ever been to England before? So what was it like going culturally, academically, then throwing on the basketball part of it? What was it like adjusting to that new life when you went overseas to Cardiff?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. Like you said, everything happens for a reason, and I was so glad that I was able to hear about that opportunity. So I applied to Cardiff University, and I got in. I honestly didn't know where Cardiff University was, never heard of it. I was just focused on the opportunity to play basketball in college. And Cardiff is a Russell Group university. So out there in the UK, it's like the equivalent of an IB League school, like Oxford or Cambridge or one of those prestigious schools. And I honestly didn't know that either when I was applying to the school. But I got accepted, and I finished out at Lemoyne. I graduated in May of 2015. And then school starts there in September. So I caught a flight from my hometown of Rochester to Cardiff University, which is located in Wales, United Kingdom. So it's actually outside of England. And I started grad school there in September of 2015. Basketball season started in October. You know, the sports there is taken less serious than the NCAA in the States. One thing I remember was we only had practice maybe three times a week, and then we had games every Wednesday. In the UK, they call it like Bucks Wednesday, British University College Sports Wednesday, where, you know, all the sports, they play their games on Wednesdays. So that was a little bit about the, you know, the sports culture there.
How the level of play compare to what the level of play that you might have seen at Lemoyne?
For sure. You know, I would compare Cardiff University, because we're in the Bucks Division I League. I would compare it to, you know, low D3 NCAA level, you know. But it's D1 there, but in terms of the skill level and the caliber, I would have to compare it to low D3 level NCAA. A lot of times when I would play against teams, they would have maybe one or two guys who are actually studying abroad from the USA, and they might have came from a D1 school. So that will obviously raise the level of play on that team. And then you also have, you know, people from the European players from the European countries, Spain and Greece, who, you know, basketball is obviously big there as well. So they had a good skill set to them as well. You know, funny story, a guy on my team named Dimitris, he was from Greece, and he was 6'10". And this is what he told us, at least. He said he knew Giannis before Giannis got to the league.
him and every other guy from Greece.
That's why I'm like, he's like, yeah, you know, Giannis didn't start playing basketball till he was 16. I know Giannis. I'm just like, okay, man.
Everybody's got a story.
Oh, yeah, of course. But no, I actually enjoy playing with, you know, different players from the European countries, because even, you know, in Spain, they have a different style of play. And, you know, I tried to learn from them and, you know, incorporate that into my game, you know, playing in the UK.
So after that year playing for Cardiff is up, where's your mindset? What are you thinking about? And how do you turn that dream of becoming a professional player for a guy who had very little opportunity in high school, very little opportunity as a college player in the United States? How do you start thinking about, hey, I think I can have a professional career over here in Europe? What did that look like?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was on a high after that one season. You know, I averaged 21. I won the MVP. I was hitting game winners. And, you know, I was really on the high that season. And, you know, it was a time where I'm in my dorm out there in the UK. And I'm like, you know what? You know, it gave me the confidence I needed. And I always knew that I could play at a high level. But that one year, you know, really gave me the confidence. So I decided, okay, I'm gonna start this pro journey after I finished grad school. So that's when I began to, you know, reach out to agents and trying out for teams.
How'd you pick an agent? What was that process like?
Okay, so obviously I was an under the radar player, so agents aren't knocking down my door calling me up. You know, trying to put me on the team. So I had to be proactive, you know, in terms of searching, doing my research online, going on the FIBA database. FIBA is obviously Overseas Basketball Network. Searching there, checking agents' resumes as how many players have they placed. Are they reliable? Will they even take a chance on me? You know, because even though I played that one year in the UK, I'm still an under the radar player when you look at the, you know, whole basketball market. You look at NCAA players, D1, D2, D3, everyone's trying to play pro basketball overseas. So, you know, I'm competing with all of those players on top of the players already overseas. So, you know, I had to be proactive with my agent search and trying to find the best guy to do the job.
Found somebody. What made that person stand out? What was it about them that eventually?
Well, you know, I went through a couple bad agents in my journey, and the one that stuck out was the one who really, you know, watched my film and really he really believed in, you know, what I was capable of doing. And He already worked with teams out there, so that gave me the confidence that if he's already worked with teams, then he know I can, you know, contribute and be an asset to a team. You know, there was agents out there that I've talked to that has never, you know, signed a player before, but they were eager to sign me. And, you know, as a not early 20s, 22, 23, you know, I didn't understand at the point, like, okay, I kind of want to go for someone more reliable and not the first agent to say, hey, I'll take you on without any experience. So, you know, definitely agent who's worked with teams, who plays players and believes in my skill set. Those are the three main factors I would have to say.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. What's the first job, and how excited are you when you get that first job?
So I want to say Cardiff City which is a pro team out in Cardiff. That was the first time I got the opportunity to play. I was real excited. It's not BBL, which is the top league in the UK. It's NBL. But I was real excited to play. Pretty much, I was already a student there, so I was familiar with the city. And I was familiar with the team as well, just from living there. And it was a great opportunity. I got a chance to win a local championship there, a bunch of exposure, and I got awarded an MVP award there as well.
Any problems getting paid that first gig?
Well, that's the thing. Because it was a low tip. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Because it was a low level, they weren't even paying. You know, and I don't want to say that I was exploited, but, you know, when you're an under the radar player and you're working your way up the ladder, you got to make some sacrifices. If you really want to play at the pro level. Like, if you don't, then, you know, maybe basketball career is not for you. But for me, I knew I was an under the radar player. And I need to get film. I need to get some type of overseas exposure. So I took the offer, even though they weren't paying me. I had housing covered and food, but, you know, I didn't get paid, which is definitely not any lucrative career for a pro basketball player.
So did you see on the horizon that if you played well, which obviously you did, that you're going to be able to parlay that into potentially what could become a paying job? And then as you were thinking about that, how'd you go about doing that? What were the next steps?
Oh, for sure. I learned a lot that first year. Just in terms of, you know, imports, how they're viewed overseas. You know, most teams get, you know, one or two imports, and those import spots are very valuable to the team. In terms of getting paid, I knew that I didn't want to get in a situation like that again. I enjoyed my time playing out there. It was a great experience. I won a championship, played against some great competition. However, you know, I didn't get paid, and that wasn't the goal. The goal was to, you know, be overseas competing and getting paid. So I learned a lot from that experience, and just even with, you know, contractual obligations with agents, and I learned a whole lot.
After that first season with Cardiff, where do you go next?
So I went back home. I went back home to Rochester. I didn't have any deals or offers after that season. What I did was I made a highlight tape of that season, and I sent it out to a bunch of teams in Europe, bunch of teams, Germany, Spain, France, countries that I was looking to potentially play in. And I believe the year was 2019 when I got back home to Rochester. And, you know, off season comes and it goes, and still didn't get any offers. Excuse me. So pretty much the agent at the time who I was working with, he's like, you know, Darrell, there's a local team, the Rochester Razor Sharks. They're pretty good. It'll give you a chance to stay in shape until we find something for you overseas. And they definitely give you a chance to compete against some nice competition. They're local. I was familiar with the hometown team, but, you know, I felt like that was taking a step backwards in a sense. You know, I just came right from overseas, and, you know, I'm like, I don't know. But once it got to late in the off season, August, you know, September, and I was without a deal, that's when I started to take that opportunity more serious. And that's how I ended up with the Rochester Razor Sharks that season.
What's that experience like in terms of, not even so much the basketball, but just the off the court stuff and kind of how that team and that league ran? Give people an idea.
Okay. Yeah. So The Rochester RazorSharks were in the semi-pro league. I believe it was the PBL, Professional Basketball League. It's nothing like the G League, a little bit less organized. We did get paid, though. They handled traveling expenses for us. We got a bunch of exposure through the city. But, you know, just in terms of the league, we only played a difference of maybe five teams in that league. Sometimes we would travel to their home court. We've traveled to Pennsylvania, Ohio, different places on the East Coast to play. We had fans in the stands. And that season specifically, 2019 going into 2020, we're playing really good. We started off 8-0, then we ended up catching a couple losses. However, obviously at the end of 2019 going into 2020 is when the pandemic hit, and our season ended up getting shut down early 2020.
So besides getting the idea for the book during the pandemic, tell us a little bit about what you did, how you handled that, and just how that affected your career.
Yeah, that played a major role. You know, because after the season with the RazorSharks, I was looking to get right back overseas. And I had a little bit of film from the Sharks, and I felt like that should be enough to, you know, garner some interest from some teams. It wasn't. Fast forward to July of 2020, when the government let up on travel restrictions, I decided, okay, I don't have any offers. I don't have any deals. I'm going to, you know, wing it. I got a couple of dollars saved up. I have some money saved up. I'm going to wing it, catch a flight to the UK, and, you know, find a team myself. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to let this pandemic stop me. I'm not going to let nothing stop me. So that's when I decided to fly to the UK in 2020, the summer of 2020, back to the UK and search for a team. When I got to the UK, everyone's saying, oh, the leagues don't know if we're going to start back up. We don't have any sponsors. Sponsors are canceling because of the pandemic. This, that, and the third. And, you know, I'm out there. I'm working out with Cardiff City because that's the only team I know. I'm trying out for BBL teams. They're not really progressing with the season. And there was a specific time in January of 2021 where I got an email from a team in the UK, the Reading Rockets. And they were looking to sign me. And I was so excited. And literally a week later, Wales in the UK went on tier 4 lockdown, which is like the highest lockdown the country can go on for the COVID. I believe it was a second wave, and the team revoked the offer. So that was really devastating for me because I feel like that was, you know, that was the closest I was getting to, you know, accomplishing my goal of, you know, playing pro basketball overseas.
So that opportunity falls through. What do you do next?
So that opportunity fell through. I fly back to the States. Now we're in 2021, and I'm thinking, okay, what do I do now? I haven't played last season besides the RazorSharks. My agent, me and him went our separate ways, and I was talking to some friends, and they're like, you know, you might want to give the RazorSharks another opportunity, you know, since you're not playing anywhere else. So I didn't want to because of, you know, my previous experience. I felt like that was more of a one-year stint sort of, but I was left with no options. So I figured if I'm going to stay in game shape to eventually, you know, get back overseas, I'm going to give them another shot. So I played the second season with the Rochester RazorSharks.
Obviously, that wasn't what you were looking for. It wasn't exactly what you hoped, but it kept your career alive through a challenging time where, look, COVID lots of schools didn't get the opportunity to play. The NCAA tournament was canceled in the spring of 2020. The NBA obviously went into the bubble in that following season. And so even though it wasn't exactly what you wanted, it did allow you to continue to play and pursue your dream. So as the restrictions for COVID start to lighten up and the world begins to open back up after that season with the Razor Sharks, what happens next?
Yeah, so after that season with the Razor Sharks, I got a highlight tape together of that season. It was pretty good. Was going back and forth with some personnel on some teams in Germany. However, the offseason came to an end, and I believe it was August of 2021. And once again, I was without an offer. And there's a camp in Spain, the EuroPro Basket Camp. They're known for, you know, placing players on teams overseas, whether that's high profile players or, you know, under the radar players who, you know, didn't get the opportunity. And what I decided was, you know, if I'm really going to do this, I'm going to invest in myself. You know, I've been working all summer. I'm going to save up some money, invest in myself. If I really want this pro hoop dream to happen, I'm going to pay for this camp. And I'm going to fly out to Spain. I'm going to get an offer there. So that's what I did. I saved up my money. In August of 2021, I flew out to Valencia, Spain for this 3-week camp, the EuroPro Basket Camp.
Describe for people what that was all about, what the experience was like, what you hoped to get out of it, and what eventually came out of that.
Oh, yeah. So the camp based in Valencia, Spain, there's you and about, it all depends on the session that you go, but there's you and about, I want to say, 40 other players. You guys are all there staying in a residence, something like a dorm/hotel. Obviously, you pay to go there, so your food is taken care of, your housing is taken care of. You're there for 3 weeks. Pretty much, it was set up how a pro basketball player overseas schedule would be set up. So we had two-a-days. We would have a practice session in the morning, finish off with stretching, and have lunch in between, and then we have another session in the afternoon. And these sessions would last 2 to 3 hours apiece. So we're going two-a-days, working out with the coaches there. We're all former or current overseas pro coaches. So some were coaching pro in Luxembourg. Some were coaching pro in Greece. So they all coached at some type of high level before, which was good. And pretty much, yeah, for the 3 weeks, we practice 5 days a week, twice a day. And then on the weekends is when we played our games. This specific camp, we also got the opportunity to play in the official Red Bull tournament, where Red Bull came. We got jerseys, and we played in the official FIBA Red Bull tournament, which was pretty cool. But, yeah, so practice 5 days a week, games on the weekends. I felt like my performance was mediocre in the games. In practices, you know, I would, you know, play very well and show some good signs. You know, coaches would let me know they see this, they see that. But, you know, when it came to game time, my stats just weren't, you know, weren't great. I mean, 10, 12 points, I just hold myself to, you know, a higher standard. And I was obviously aiming to score at least 20 plus at a time because I consider myself a scorer. So my performance wasn't great in the games. And leading up to the end of the 3 weeks, you know, you start to hear about different players getting offers. Okay, this one player got an offer to play in Canary Islands. Oh, wow. You know, he's a great player. I'm happy for him. You know, I don't have any jealous bone in my body. I was happy for, you know, anybody who got the opportunity to get an offer, you know, and, you know, hear about different players getting offers. And, you know, by the end of the camp, I didn't receive any offers. And That was very disappointing for me, very disappointing to say the least.
but that doesn't go exactly the way you hoped. And it's contagion money. Flew to Spain. Spent that time. Spent that energy. You spent that money. What do you do when it's over and nothing has come to you? How do you handle that? And what do you do next?
I mean, it was a long flight home. I had a lot to think about at that point, you know, because I invested my money. I think I was 28 years old, going on 29. And, you know, I had a lot to think about in terms of my future and, you know, okay, I invested all this money. I didn't get the opportunity I was looking for. What do I do? You know, and when I got back home, I kind of, you know, you walked away from the game for a couple months. You know, I didn't pick up a basketball. I didn't want to hear anything about it, you know. Finally, you know, in 2022, I started contacting some more teams. And I had a tryout for a Canadian NBL team. And I also went to the 76ers G League tryout. And the Canadian team, they actually gave me a second call back. However, they ended up signing some of their former players. And the NBA G League tryout, it went okay. The 5-on-5, I'll admit, I didn't play up to my standards. However, you know, during the drills, I was knocking down shots, playing basketball sound basketball. Jameer Nelson, he's actually the GM of the 76ers G League team. So, you know, I was chatting with him a little bit about my journey and, you know, playing the game at a high level. I didn't perform high enough to get a call back for the NBA G League standards. I knew that when I left the tryout, you know, but it was a privilege to be there. You know, it was a privilege to be there, compete at that level and be around the NBA environment, you know, so that's what happened after I came back from Spain.
What was different about, let's just say, the environment when you talked about the NBA environment, the new environment versus, let's say, your experience with the Razor Sharks? What's different about how the G League looked and felt compared to what it was like with the Razor Sharks?
Yeah. So honestly, the G League players, athleticism, you know, almost everybody there is athletic. You know, everybody's dunking, excuse me, doing windmills, you know, playing flashy. The athleticism is there. What I will say, though, is, you know, looking at all the talent, I felt like I was probably a top three jump shooter there in terms of pure jump shooter, jump shot, top three, top two jump shooter there, which I was surprised, you know, because you think about NBA, you think everyone's a stud, but, you know, when I get there, you know, you got some athletic guys, you got some bigs who can handle the ball, but in terms of sharpshooters, I didn't really see too much there. So that's one thing that actually surprised me. But in terms of the athleticism and the skills, obviously the skills are, you know, higher than what I've seen overseas and at the Razor Sharks, but definitely some great players there.
So you get an opportunity to try out with that G-League team and get an opportunity to interact with Jameer Nelson. Where do you go from there? What are you thinking at that point?
Right. So, you know, NBA is the highest you can get, you know, highest you can get NBA G-League. So at that point, I'm like, I'm going on 30, you know, what's next? You know, it's, my uncle always told me, you know, basketball is a young man's game, you know, and you look at LaMelo Ball, you know, rookie of the year, he was only like 18. You look at, you know, Ja Morant, a lot of these standout players are super young, and, you know, the game is getting even younger, you know. Luka was playing pro at the age of 16, you know, and you know, I start to think, like, you know, I don't know when this tour will be over. You know, it's hard to hang up the sneakers, but I don't know when this tour will be over. So, you know, at this stage, I'm reaching the end of my career, the final stages, you know, And I can accept that, knowing that, you know, all I've accomplished in the game and my whole journey from start to finish is, like I said, if you get the book, you know, you'll really understand, or for the people listening, if they get the book, they'll really understand why it's bigger than basketball. So, you know, I feel like I'm reaching my final stages, you know, playing the game, and I'm just going to really take everything that I've experienced and learned and, you know, try to give back to the youth and the up and coming basketball community.
Talk about what that looks like. What do you see as being next when your career does finally come to an end?
That's a good question. Some form of, you know, coaching. I've already done a little bit of personal training with some kids. Some form of coaching, maybe player development coaching. That's something that's really been sticking out to me. I've always been a student of the game. I read Phil Jackson's book, 11 Rings, where he talks about coaching Michael Jordan and Kobe. And, you know, I've always been a student of the game. So I really want to, you know, incorporate that in the, probably somehow, you know, player development. You know, but I haven't really put too much thought into it, but I think that's where the next steps will be.
You feel like you've made some good connections in the game with the people that could help you in that pursuit when you get to that point?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Overseas and in the States, I feel like I made some great networks and some great connections. And, you know, I've already been getting some great feedback from the book that I just came out with in March. So, absolutely.
All right. So, before we wrap things up, I want you to answer this final two-part question. Part one, when you think about the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two, when you think about just your experiences with the game of basketball, if you could boil it down to one thing, what brings you the most joy in the game of basketball? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Okay. And the first question was, what does this next year or two look like, you said?
Yep. Biggest challenge. What do you see as the biggest challenge in the next year or two?
Biggest challenge. Okay. So I want to say, if I don't get the opportunity I'm looking for, you know, the biggest challenge would be, you know, transitioning, from a player, to a, you know, a coach or, you know, a trainer, you know, that would be the biggest challenge. Because ever since I was so young, I've just, all I know is playing the game and competing. And, you know, that aspiration to play at the high level, that's been in me since a kid. So that I would have to say that would be the biggest challenge, you know, changing my mindset and understanding that I can give back to the game without, you know, being on the court, you know, and like I said, I've accomplished a lot. I've seen a lot. And, you know, taking that and just keeping that in mind. So the second part of the question.
Biggest joy.
I want to just say biggest joy I have is, you know, being out there. You know, because, you know, I noticed it maybe in my mid-20s, but, you know, when I'm out there on the court, like there's no real thinking going on, you know, all this. And this is probably for a lot of basketball players, you know, they feel free out there to whatever is going on in their life. They're not thinking about it. You know, they're out there, they're having fun, they're playing free, they're playing flashy. And that's the biggest joy when I'm out there. You know, I could be competing against whoever, you know, if I'm out there playing, having fun, you know, I'm at peace, you know.
Really well said, Darrell. Really well said. I think anybody who's played the game can relate to that. You kind of feel like the basketball court is your own world. And when you're out there, you kind of let everything else fall away. Just kind of envelop yourself in the game. I think anybody who's played it can relate to what you just said. Before we wrap up, I want to give you one more chance to tell people how they can find the book, Tour to Hoops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tell us where we can find it, where people can find you, where they can connect with you, social media, website, where they can order the book. Give us all back that again. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the book is available on Amazon.com. So if you go on Amazon, or even if you got the app, you type in Tour de Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball, written by myself, Darrell Nelson. The book is available on Kindle. If you have an iPad or a tablet, the book is also available on paperback and hardcover. So get the book, Tour de Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball, craziest basketball story you will ever read. I promise you that. And just a little side note, on the cover, the demons in the back have the numbers 585. That's actually my area code. So that's no coincidence. That's the Rochester cool. That's area cool. code. Yep.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the cover's cool. When I noticed the demons, I'm like, yeah, that's interesting. That is very interesting. And I think anybody who's listening to this can go and look at the cover. I think you'll get an idea of kind of what that cover means, the significance of it. So it's really cool. And it's interesting, cool, put that with the Eric Jordan in the cover. Yeah, you snuck it in there. I like it. So, well, hey, Jarrell, can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. Please, if you're out there listening, go and pick up a copy of Jarrell's book, Tour de Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball. Make sure you get it. Amazon.com. I promise you won't be disappointed in the read. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening.
And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.